So we're going to have the first part of this panel now on detaching from lower desire.
Afternoon, friends. So, as was said, this month we will be discussing awakening spiritual consciousness. It's a huge topic, so that's why we're spending so much time on it. There are many aspects to this idea of awakening spiritual consciousness. So a lot of information will be given out. This panel, though, will be focusing mostly on detaching from lower desires, because this is about the basis for awakening spiritual consciousness, is that we have to pull ourselves away from this idea of the lower desires. So as the title for this panel is Detaching from Lower Desires, we'll start with one of the major ideas to awaken spiritual consciousness, the whole idea being to clear one's mind of external materialism, because the materialistic lifestyle is a lower aspect to our lives. We're focusing on the outward exterior, and we have to mainly focus on our internal spiritual life in order to detach from these lower desires and to awaken our spiritual consciousness. And initially, to do this, we need to understand what the idea of the nature of desire actually is. What is desire? I mean, people say, oh, it's what I want. But theosophy talks about it in a much more broad sense. And it focuses on what like a metaphysical aspect of desire, because it's much more complicated. And there's a saying in the philosophy, behind will stands desire. So we have a quote that will combine both of them together. Will is the offspring of the divine, the God in man. Desire, the motive power of the animal life. Most of men live and by desire, mistaking it for will. But he who would achieve must separate will from desire and make his will the ruler. For desire is unstable and ever-changing, while will is steady and constant. Both will and desire are absolute creators, forming the man himself and his surroundings. But will creates intelligently, desire blindly and unconsciously. The man, therefore, makes himself in the image of his desires, unless he creates himself in the likeness of the divine. Through the likeness of the divine, through his will, the child of the light. His task is twofold: to awaken the will, to strengthen it by use and conquest, to make it absolute ruler within his body, and parallel with this, to purify desire So when there's that statement behind will stands desire, depending upon from which aspect desire is functioning at the time, higher or lower, that because it's changing, it could affect the will. So like everything else in life, everything is dual in nature. And this also includes desire. And as we said, there is a higher and lower aspect. So the choices we make, which include our motive is very important with this because our motive will affect our karma and it will affect our desires as well. So the choices we make and motive will determine which aspect of desire we will use, whether it will come from our higher nature or lower. And once that choice is made, will is then spurred into action. And that can be either on the physical, mental, or psychic planes. The dual nature of mind, and in Sanskrit, manas, goes along with the higher and lower aspects of desire. It too has a higher and a lower aspect. But for both of them, we need to remember that desire is one, and even though we talk about a higher and lower, it is still one principle, and it just functions as to how we move it. And the same with mind. Mind is one, but there is a higher and lower aspect to it. Lower mind will, excuse us, lower mind tends downward towards desire, whereas higher mind tends upward towards the Bodhi principle, which is spiritual soul. So, whatever choices we make will take us to the appropriate level of being high or low. So, with mind, then. Mind, if it's tending towards desire, then this is where a lot of the materialism, the anger, all the negative qualities can raise up their themselves and affect us and prevent us from detaching from lower desire. So our focus then should be to raise it higher. Desire is a force and energy that colors and moves matter, awakening its seeds for better or worse. So, motive is the inner side of desire, and actions are the outer. So, when we're thinking of desire as being a force and energy that colors and moves matter, it is also the will that is involved as the mover. Motive is the inner side, as we said, actions are the outer. They can be blind, impulsive, and driven, rational, self-driven by sensual-based desire and action. Or it can be the self and intelligently directed according to principles, law, philosophy, need, and others. So then we can see what is high and which are to desire. Basically, if we look at the spiritual side of life, help others, and make theosophy a daily part of our lives, we will be able to detach then from lower desire. So how do we do this then? How do we, practically speaking, what do we need to do? And it comes down to self-observation and doing inner work. So practically, we can look at some of these ideas. So our overall goal then is to work towards perfection, to return to the source of all, which is deity, to understand that all is soul. Everything has a soul, all the lower kingdoms, and of course, humans. And that soul in all the lower kingdoms is working its way, is also working its way to perfection. It is important that we understand that in order to spiritually progress, the philosophy suggests to us to realize that we try to consistently think, act, feel towards our Buddhi nature, that compassionate nature, helping others, smiling, saying thank you, open doors. You know, there's just so many little things. You know, there's so much going on in the world today that we think, how can I, as one person, help the world? But if we put forth positive ideas, positive emotions, positive thoughts, the astral gets colored with those positive feelings and impressions. And hopefully, if enough people can do that, maybe we can, you know, combat some of that negativity that's out there. So we can read spiritual books, you know, higher minded books that aren't violent or evil. We can meditate and focus on a higher ideal. We can keep our minds active on a higher plane and not be passive during our meditations. And limit passive activities, endless watching of TV, playing games, you know, video games all the time for hours on our iPads and phones and movies. So basically what we're looking at here to end in regards to detaching from lower desires is just trying to practice theosophy in our daily lives and to focus on the higher aspect of the philosophy and of our lives, be compassionate, practice universal brotherhood, and try not to get focused on all the materialism that is out there these days. So that's it for my part, and I will turn it over to my co-panelist.
Okay, we don't know why that's flashing. Hopefully it won't occur again. So we'd like to begin with a quote from the Voice of the Silence. Kill out desire, but if thou killest it, take heed lest from the dead it should again arise. Desire nothing, chafe not at karma, nor at nature's changeless laws. Desire only that which is in thee. Desire only that which is beyond thee. Desire only that which is unattainable. So we think actually the second part of that is from Light on the Path. But anyway, it's worth considering that killing out desire, that's what we can't kill it entirely. It's more killing out the lower desires, which is what the panel is about today. Of course, the highest desires are what we're working towards. And we want to mention that kama, which is one sort of desire, the lower kama of the lower mind, the animal passions and desires, are in the glossary, the Theosophical Glossary, it defines kama as evil desire, lust, cleaving to existence. But there's a higher, and that is Kamadeva. And that is, Kamadeva is the god of love. It is the first conscious, all-embracing desire for universal good, love for all that lives and feels, needs help and kindness, the first feeling of infinite tender compassion and mercy that arose in the consciousness of the creative one force. As soon as it came into life and being as a ray from the absolute, desire first arose in it, which is the primal germ of mind. So that is the absolute highest desire. Evolution works, it comes from the highest, and then it involutes, and then evolutes. So we are on the evolutionary upswing now. So detachment through discernment. We need to discern between the real and the unreal, the permanent and the changing. All knowledge can become ours through concentration. In the lower man who lives and thrives by acquisitiveness, concentration does not develop in the higher spiritual sense. So often in business, there's a selfish motive where ethics are ignored, and this does not lead one to the terrace of enlightenment. Ever the motive of achieving health, even the motive of achieving health, wealth, and happiness for oneself personally is tainted with selfishness and detracts to that extent from the power of true concentration. But if one is to fit oneself to be the better able to help and teach others, it requires a development of control of thought, body, and speech. This is, simply put, concentration on the task at hand, all tasks big and small. In other words, the plain duties of life. This is required to develop clearness of perception, keeping out of the mind the things that should not be there, holding in the mind things that should be there. Real discernment is not ordinary concentration, but pertains to some higher aspect than the acquisitive mind. Discernment results from the radiation of buddhi manas in and through lower mind. Wisdom springs up within us when we lead the necessary life. Real discernment develops upon depth of knowledge. There's three factors, basically. Depth of knowledge, accumulated experience, and consciousness of the divine in nature. It is universal spiritual perception, the vision of the soul. Theosophy points the way to every prisoner soul to the state of freedom and light and ever deeper compassion. Our progress is unfolding It's unfolding discernment. It is in proportion to our effort in subduing the carnal nature to discern, in the real sense of the word, the state of consciousness must be one of calmness. And it's good to review chapter 18, the last chapter in the Bhagavad Gita. And it's always wonderful to read the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is said really contains pretty much everything in it, or the most important, the most salient points. So we're now going to talk about the role of will and aspiration. And in the preface to the first edition of The Ocean of Theosophy, it says, the role of will and aspiration, that will is a power or faculty that is hidden, subtle, undiscoverable as to its essence, and only visible in its effects. It is absolutely colorless and varies in moral quality in accordance with the desire behind it, acting often without our knowledge, and it also operates in all kingdoms below man. So all beings, in a sense, all kingdoms have will, but it is directed by the self-conscious beings, which are humans. So, as said, will is a mysterious power. And it is at once the friend and the foe of the neophyte. It has relation with one's thoughts, one's feelings, one's faith. And an aspect of will manifests in the body also. Now, stubbornness is mistaken for will. If someone is stubborn and someone is obstinate, that's not will in essence. And also, wishful thinking and a sentimental reliance on the deity, on the masters, and on the higher self is mistaken for submission to the divine will. And so we often hear the word neophyte, and it's interesting, we looked it up. It's from the Greek, it means newly planted. So someone who is beginning their journey in spiritual knowledge and compassion as a neophyte is one who's newly planted. So this brings us to compassion, which is the crown of spiritual life and the most necessary of all the virtues, for it is achieved by the harmonious union of the heart and the head. Compassion is universal love, intelligent and dispassionate. Like the sun, it sheds light on all things, and like karma, it gives to each his rightful and necessary place in the sun or in the shade. We need to realize the universal in ourselves first. And then, in order to express compassion towards others, so that's what we need to do. We need to, in a sense, we need to learn about compassion. We need to see how we're connected to all of nature. And you know, all this suffers. So in order to do this, we need to stop swinging back between sentimentality and callousness, because these are to be avoided. Being overly sentimental blinds us to being compassionate in a sense. It limits us. And of course, callousness does. We don't think we need to go into that. So these are pairs of opposites swinging like a pendulum, and we can rise above them to gain compassion, which is the true path of love. So, we think we have plenty more here, but this is intended to be not an exposition, it's a short talk. So we'll keep it at that to give plenty of time for questions and answers at this time, and observations, comments. So we'll entertain those at this time. Okay, yes, MDW.
Well, here I am. Here we are. Where is our battle? What is it that we should be concerned about? We live in a world that's so tumultuous. Is there somewhere we can retreat from all that chaos?
Well, we're actually retreating from the chaos here, with all these like-minded thinkers. And, our job is to be able to, when the meeting is over, to take the feelings and the information and the love that has been received from here out there, and try to continue with, as was said in the first talk, making theosophy a living power in our lives. We have a lot of tools, the books, and the Bhagavad Gita is mentioned frequently in our meetings, and for a reason. It's actually a battle, but it is a battle between our higher and our lower selves, which is what this class today is about, trying to detach ourselves from the lower desires. And that's a battle, because we're in the dark age now, the Kali Yuga, which is very materialistic. So, we have to be aware of that, but we also have the option of, when we do make the right choices and we keep the higher motives, we can actually progress faster in this yuga. So it's a battle within us, the higher and lower. And we have the tools. We have plenty of tools through theosophy and with each other to help win that battle.
Any other comments, SL? And then JCS.
Would it be reasonable to say then that we are attached to our desires or anything to the extent we dwell on it? And detachment is not so much a fleeing or retreat, but an actual movement of our mind to something else. And if we do that, how do we avoid being attached personally to that higher thing? Because there could be such a thing as spiritual selfishness as far as we understand.
Yeah, that's a concept which we don't remember hearing before studying theosophy, is spiritual selfishness. And it is possible to attain great heights, but just for oneself. But that's really not, well, that's definitely not what theosophy is about. It's about divine wisdom and power. And the power to help others. And that can only come from seeing everyone as one sister and brother, to see the humanness in everyone. So spiritual selfishness is, well, the danger is one would can pride oneself up. It talks about a whole, we can climb a tower and we're just haughty fools, really looking down on others. And that's extreme, but it can happen. JCS, did you have a comment or question?
Yeah, my comment has flowed in the previous two comments.
That's fine.
You know, the whole thing spins on motive. And if we find ourselves considering, how am I going to retreat from this mishigas that's going on in the world? If the thought basis is to protect the personality, the peace of mind of that personality, the well-being of a particular household, if you will, then we know we're off track, and that we've lost the ability to live in soul, live in mind, live in heart, and live as if we could extend a calming, loving energy presence throughout the entire globe. That's our task. And by repositioning the focus of the mind and the heart, we can again reestablish peace and harmony and work from that point out in order to assist everyone, those in our households and those afar.
Yes, compassion is no attribute, it is the law of laws. And it is in the primal germ, in the primal germ of mind, which is at the very, very beginning of each period of evolution. That's what it is. That's the germ of mind. It is compassion. It is love. It is peace and understanding. It is helping, is recognizing suffering and doing what we can. Sometimes it's beyond us, but we can still offer kind words or a smile. We're not all skilled in certain areas, perhaps there's other areas that we're skilled in. So we need to recognize our gifts, and we all have gifts, every one of us.
So in regards to that, the declaration puts forth the idea of universal brotherhood. And it's very emphatic that this is an important idea, that as you know, as the two presenters just talked about, that it's very it's important that we continue to, as was said, just smile at somebody. You never know how you can affect a person's day just by talking kindly at the cashier, or when you're ordering food, or just waiting at the light to change, you know, to walk. You never know when you're going to just nod your head and say good morning, and something nice may happen.
MDW.
You know, the statement, be kind. And every time I hear that, we think of the Dalai Lama, and we think of, just that nature, and so forth, and that and the idea of spiritual selfishness. It's something that in Buddhism they call the Hinayana school and the Mahayana school. The small boat or the large boat for everyone, and or the one boat for yourself. So that's a concept that you can find in other religions.
Thank you.
Yes, Phil.
Well, aren't we all in the same boat together? It says on the front of the periodical, the one self. So theoretically, couldn't we make the battle obsolete if we accept that the inner work is the same as the outer work in essence?
So we are all in one boat, and we may be spinning our wheels. So we think the analogy is the greater wheel and the smaller wheel. But even so, we're all trying to be at the center of the wheel and radiating love and kindness through the spokes that might get around to the rim.
Yeah. So when the will is colored by desire, we're thinking about that, we're mulling it over, should we or shouldn't we, or whatever, and then we express it. So when the question was just presented, isn't the inner work the same as the outer work? It is, because what people are seeing that we're doing is the effect of what, the thought that started in our minds. Everything starts with the thought. So, depending upon how we color that thought, that will be expressed on the outer plane that people will see. So, thoughts are things. They're very powerful. So we are encouraged to be very mindful of what we're thinking about. And one of the interesting things that this student learned in the very beginning is that karma can be affected. Your karma can be affected by even what you're thinking. So it's very important that we try to color our thoughts in a positive light.
Yes, that's all.
Is it more important that we control our thoughts and thereby control our desires? Or is it impossible to control our thoughts unless we first control our desires?
Ooh.
It's like a chicken or an egg type thing.
Right.
But in fact,
Right.
what principle in our nature has greater power? Our mind or our passions or desire?
Well, it's both, of course, but what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Well, in most cases, we think it's the chicken, but the chicken came from an egg, so there must have been there. Who sat on the first egg? We've always wondered that. We don't know if we'll ever get the answer. But there's a mysterious power of mind, and that's the will. And behind will stands desire. And will is that colorless force. And it can be used for higher or lower purposes. We're told that we have to watch our desires. And also, well, that mind is real plane of action, and that the actions come from our thoughts. So we think that it's mind, thoughts, mind's thoughts and desires, we don't know. is anyone else?
Yeah, but we this student feels pretty certain that if we had no desires, there wouldn't, nothing would transpire. So we think that desire is makes the thought, or colors the thought rather. So depending upon what our desires are, and the one quote that we had about how desires, wish we could find it, but I don't want to take the time.
Well, can anyone else help us out of this conundrum we're in here?
We could have a whole meeting on this.
Oh, easily. Yes, JCS.
Well, it's springtime, so we can brood over the old egg concept. But we recall reading in several places that there's this phrase, desire first arose in it, and that there's this vibratory coming forth, which is symmetrical, it's lawful, it's an energetic force. And that reverberation, emanation, whatever, invigorates all manifestation and supports all manifestation. But it's spirit, it is mind that is in existence that senses this vibration and is then moved to act. So in many, many ways, you don't get a chicken without an egg. You don't get the egg without the chicken. It's more helpful to try to consider, if I hone my mundane desires down, and if I try in my best heart of hearts to have a one-pointed desire for universal brotherhood, the nucleus of universal brotherhood, that will color all ideation, won't it? And everything else will stem from that. But aren't we right now in this period of evolution gravely, gravely energized or overseen or empowered by desire? Isn't it said that mind hasn't come to full fruition yet? We're still in the early stages of this development and activity?
Yes, it's that acquisitiveness, that desire to achieve, to do, and to compete against others, often by putting ourselves forward. So, you know, like the song says, another one bites the dust, to be a champion. Yes, MDW?
Yes, I think you're reading from the voice of the silence. Didn't you not say in that desire no thing?
Right.
So
kill out desire, but if thou killest it, take heed lest from the dead it should again arise.
Yes. So I what that sort of prompts me to keep on remembering is, when I have a desire, do I really look at it and detach from it? You know, where is that coming from? What is that all about? What are, do you know, it's like that, I don't know who said this, but an examined life is not worth living. So you know, the little nuances of life as we live every moment.
Right. It's said that the unexamined life is not worth living. And so theosophy teaches us concentration and meditation and detachment, considering ourselves as the observer, looking down on ourselves, that we are the self of all, that all is connected, that all is one. And not to be passive, because if we've been indoctrinated a certain way without questioning, then we're passive. We're not thinking. We're not examining. So we should examine our thoughts always, always be on guard. And also keep in mind that we are selflessly, we are, excuse me, we are ceaselessly deceived. So that deception, that illusion that we live in, because we do, much of the world is illusory. So we need to look out. We always need to be on guard. We think the Buddhists say, pay attention like your head's on fire. Did you have a follow-up, MDW?
No, go ahead. There's other
Okay,
comments.
there's other hands here.
I'm going to say
Oh,
something.
sorry. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm over here.
I see you. I see you. I can see you on the screen.
So when we were talking about desire and how it can affect our thoughts, desire is a force and an energy that colors and moves matter. Motive is the inner side of desire, and actions are the outer. So it is an imperative on us that we do examine our lives, and that when if we think of something, if a desire pops in our mind, as was just said, examining our lives in order to determine our motive and our higher thoughts are important when we're trying to detach from these lower desires, because detaching from them is the only way that we're going to progress, become more spiritual, and eventually reach perfection.
Yes, JCS.
Well, perhaps this is word games, but it is a nice little seed idea for meditation. In the voice, when we read desire nothing, there's a whole nother way to understand that sentence if we pronounce it desire no thing. And in that way, we get back to the symbology of this the circle as a symbol of the universe, of all. And if we are desiring no thing, the unknowable, that symbol of that all-inclusive circle, then we begin to think about the role of desire, of trying to push toward thinking only spiritually. It's a very different concept from somebody that's reading along and says, okay, desire nothing. Look around my house. Okay, I'm never going to shop again. We don't need to paint and paper, blah, blah, blah. Very different applications, the same words on the page, but sometimes the pronunciation or the emphasis brings on a whole new meaning.
Yes, we're all rays of the divine, and the deity, the divine, is no thing. It's immutable, it's boundless, it's indefinable, it's omnipresent, but it is no thing. So to desire no thing, in a sense, is to try to raise one's consciousness up as high as one can. SL?
Well, here's something we can check, test, and verify for ourselves. We have heard that the cause of attachment for the mind and the cause for the influence of desire on the mind is the fact that we self-identify with desires. We believe that we are these desires. So the next time you feel a desire, whether it's for a piece of chocolate cake or repeating the pleasure of a piece, eating a piece of chocolate cake, take a moment to stand back in your mind and observe the experience, not identifying with the experience. You're going through the experience, but you're witnessing it as the observer. You're different from the experience of the sensation desire. And we are told if we do that, the pull of the desire for the repetition of that experience, sensual or otherwise, will weaken, will naturally weaken its hold on ourselves. So the idea is that true detachment comes from ceasing to identify with what is not our true selves.
Thank you. And on that note, the hour has expired. So in keeping with the cycles, we're going to end the meeting, but we just want to thank everyone for considering these ideas. And as we all go forth to try to practice these in our daily lives. So thank you all.
Bye. See you Wednesday.